Hello and welcome to another episode of Start Writing. This is A Beginner's Guide to Writing a Novel, episode 9. I'm Jay Washburn and this is...
Joe Bendosky.
And actually, Joe, this is funny. I should have talked to you about before the episode, but I was thinking we should be introducing ourselves with our books. Like, I'm Jay Washburn, the author of Star Child.
and I'm Joe Bendosky, author of the Skyfall Conspiracy Series.
And today's episode, we are going to talk about editing, and it depends on how long this runs, but I may break this into two episodes, which would be editing alone and then editing together. And what I mean is there's a job that you do as an editor looking at your own work, and then there's a job that you do in collaboration with other people like your editor or beta readers or your writing group, stuff like that. So that's our objective today, or this episode, editing alone. And this is the process that we go through to get our draft as like final as it can be. And Joe, you mentioned this quote. I looked it up. This is Neil Gaiman, and he tweeted this in response to some other conversation. I actually didn't even look up the whole conversation, but, he says, write down everything that happens in the story. So that's blazing through your first draft, yeah. Right? Get to the end of it. And then he says, and then in your second draft, make it look like you knew what you were doing all along. Yeah. And I just feel like that's a pretty brilliant piece of advice. To me, I think it's so important to finish your draft because, like, maybe you don't know what needs to change in the beginning of your story because you don't know how it ends yet. And it's by completing that draft that you then get the perspective of, this is how I need to adjust my story to make it flow and be smooth and solid. I'm just like a huge proponent of finish your draft first.
So yeah, and for me, I know like a lot of stuff comes up in the chapters itself. Like I go through and I think through the general outline of the book, and then I go through and I think through the outline of the chapter I'm writing before I write it. But then when I am in it, when the dialogue or the action is occurring, I get new ideas and I'm like, oh, this is cool. I'm going to do it because it's here and it's now. And my brain is like really focused on it. And then suddenly the pieces don't fit together so beautifully anymore. Right. And yeah. I think that's definitely like, I now have to make sure that I am aware of all the new pieces that are in that draft. So that when I go back to revisions, it's like, okay, you made all these changes along the way from the original outline. Now you got to make it look like that's what the original outline was all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll have friends who are writers, and sometimes they'll ask me to look at, you know, their first 30,000 words or whatever. And I just tell them, no, you got to finish that draft. And I'd love to review it once you're done, but like, you don't even know. So how am I supposed to know?
Yeah. But,
okay. So this is kind of a fun story. So I used to teach freshman English, and I would show this video of Jet Li, and, he's in this fight and he punches a dude in the head, and all of a sudden the guy kind of, he like stares off blankly and kind of holds up his hands like stop. And it becomes apparent that he just lost his sight. Like literally the punch made him blind. And so Jet Li and the guy put on their blindfolds and then they continue the fight blindfolded. And so like a little piece of straw gets dropped or something. And there's all these kung fu punches because of the sound. And it's like, it's a super fun clip, kind of cheesy, but... I would show this to them as a way of introducing what I call the Kung Fu method. And so I had a specific assignment where I said, your assignment is to go home. I can't remember what the prompt was, but I want you to cover your screen or cover your eyes and then write and like answer this prompt without looking at what you're writing. And the objective of this assignment is to separate composing from editing. And when you literally can't see your screen, you are forced to only compose. You can't edit. You can't change your mind. You just don't know where your cursor is, and you're forced to go forward. And I feel like that's a very important principle. So even though this episode is about editing, I'm starting it by saying don't edit until you need to. Like, don't let that editing bog down your composition process.
So this is actually the principle behind sprints, right? Mm. So if you're familiar with the work of Chris Fox, who is the one who really pioneered and then widespread the method of writing sprints, which, you know, have become very widespread. There's even software to help you track them and everything. And the whole idea behind a sprint is that you use that to crank out a first draft, and that you don't, like, you don't look back, you don't edit, you don't fix spelling, you don't fix grammar, you just write as fast as you can for, you know, 10 to 15 minutes, and just, you know, crank out the novel that way. And it's a very effective method for getting out that first draft.
Dang, and so his sprints are as short as 15 minutes, huh?
That's cool. His shorts are as short as 5. To do sprint longer than 10 to 15 minutes requires a certain degree of hand strength, because you are writing so fast. Like, if I haven't done sprints for a while, my hands hurt after about 10 or 15 minutes. Like, just like muscle fatigue, like I was lifting weights with my hands.
Well, what keeps you from pausing? Are you trying to hit a certain word count, and so you're just
so
rushing?
Yeah, the goal of the sprint is to write as fast as you can. And I mean, is it, you know, Chris Fox, who was saying, you know, you can get between 8,000 and 10,000 words in an hour with this method. Now, it's not a solid hour, because very few people can sprint for an hour straight. But it's 15 minutes, you know, and then you take a break, and then, you know, another 15 and another 15. But, you know,
yeah,
if you're going 15 on, 15 off, then you're still doing 10,000 words in 2 hours, which is as much as some writers get in a week, right? Mm.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But you've got to work up to that, and two, you can't stop, right? To be able to hit that kind of word count, there's no going back, there's no fixing, there's no correcting, and there's no stopping. You just got to just hit it as hard as you can nonstop all the way through the finish. Huh. And it's a little intense, it's a little crazy.
It sounds like it can help. And for me, like, I actually feel like I am a pretty good editor. And to me, like, if you pump out that first draft, then now you have a lump of clay in front of you that you can continue to shape. And for me, that's so helpful to just, like, to move on to that editing phase, because you've got something to work with.
Yeah. I am a fan of the phrase that we don't, you know, you don't tell a story with an ink and a pen, right? Like, that is not the thing you use to tell a story, the ink and the pen. You use the first draft. That is what you mold, not ink, but in words, but rather the first draft. That is what is molded into the story.
Dude, that's cool. I haven't heard that, but, so it was funny. One of my students, submitted her assignment to me, and it was a bunch of jumbled letters, like it didn't even make sense. And what happened was, she had moved her finger from the J key to the H key.
Oh.
But she was blindfolded while she was writing.
So she didn't cover her screen, she blindfolded herself?
Yeah, so she's sitting there typing on the wrong letters.
I don't know. Anyway, that feels like a bluff, because that J key's got the thing. Same with the F.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
It's like, did she, or did she just be like, just like hammer down and hold her hands on the whole keyboard and then turn in that assignment? And be like, see, I did it. Man,
it looked legitimate, like a secret code almost. But anyway, so that's just a caution. So something, this is another little story. When I was writing X-Dot, that book has ciphers in it. So, like, they're these little encoded messages that if you can figure them out, then there's like a secret message in that book. But one of them was in the chapter title, and it was NDK. It's just like this random string of characters. And as I was editing X-Dot, there was a moment where I was like, oh, I need to go to that one chapter that has a cipher in the heading. And so I hit Control F, you know, on NDK, and it popped me right to that chapter. And I'm kind of surprised that this stuck, but I was a little bit charmed, like, oh, of course, NDK, that, like, those three characters are never going to be together anywhere else in the book, which they weren't. And so I started doing that in my draft. So if I'm composing and I have a thought like, oh, I need to go look this up, I need to research this, I need to make sure it's the same character or whatever, I just type NDK and then I keep writing, like, and that allows me. So then when I'm editing, I'll even tell people, I'm like, well, I have 21 NDKs I need to resolve, and then this draft should be done. But that's a little thing that I use to push editing for later, when there's something that I need to work on in editorial wise, but I don't want to do it right now. As a side note, NDK is found in the English language in the word handkerchief, H-A-N-D-K. Anyway, so you'll end up getting an extra NDK on your to-do list if you have a handkerchief in your story. But anyway, so that's just a tip I have for pushing editing to later. So another thing I want to talk about is there are levels of editing. And so, I mean, obviously you have a phoneme, which is like the smallest sound that has meaning, I think. Yeah. Or Joe, is there another word? Anyway, you have a sentence, right? And that's like a cohesive string of you're communicating something. And then bigger is paragraph and then chapter and then an arc, like a character arc that usually flows across many chapters. And then finally, there's story. And I feel like there's a strong tendency for writers to focus on sentence editing or paragraph editing.
I think that is born out of that it's there, right? When you sit down, there are paragraphs and sentences right in front of you that need fixing.
Yeah.
Or could be better.
Yeah. And honestly, I think copy editing I have an image up here that shows there's content editing, that's global. Then there's chapter editing, and that's mid-level. And then there's copy editing, and that's like mechanical. But I also have those three listed as story, prose, and poetry. And like when you're copy editing or you're focused on the sentence level, you may be deciding, well, should I say the word soaked or should I say the word drenched? And like that's a question for a poet. And honestly, there's nothing wrong with having your prose be poetic. In fact, it's great. But like the caveat is if it's a problem, if this copy editing, if the small stuff is keeping you from the big stuff, stop doing the small stuff, because the big stuff is way more important. Like you're going to sell and you're going to be successful if you have a good story, not if you can point to one sentence and they're like, whoa, that was beautiful. That's a really good sentence. Like it doesn't matter. They're never going to read it unless you have a good story.
Yeah. It's bigger than that, because when you're working at the story level, whole sections of your book will be thrown out. If you spend, 20 hours really polishing chapter 4, and then you get to the content level and you're like, oh, chapter 4's got to go. You got to redo, start from scratch. Then that's just 20 hours wasted.
Yeah, well, and also it's like creating this incentive for you to not delete a chapter that you need to delete.
Yes.
It's like, no, delete it. You got to, and you shouldn't have spent all that time on it.
I think you're 100% right. I think if you spend that much time on the chapter, polishing it and really getting it sharp, and then everyone you talk to says it's got to go, you don't do it. Instead of doing what's good for the story, you cling to it because you've invested so much into it. I think that you're right. Far more likely you'll cling to something that should go away rather than committing, wasting, feeling like you wasted all that time by throwing it out. Be like, people, it'll be fine. I would do that. I think that's a mistake I would make as a writer.
Yeah, me too.
Even today, sure. I'll be like, but I spent all that time.
So yeah, the trick is to like, as much as you can, delay your copy editing and chapter editing and just focus on that content. Make sure the story's awesome. And anyway, it's tricky to not do that, but... another thing is every time you content edit, you have to copy edit again. And maybe that's not universally true, but I know for myself, if I go back and I'm making big changes, I usually make small errors, and that forces me to copy edit all over again. So it's kind of a waste if you're like copy editing and then go back and content, cause you got to recopy edit. So that's like another thing to be aware of. I just pulled up a couple examples. Sometimes I find typos, copy editing errors in the books I read. This was from, what's it called? There's some Dirk Pitt novel, and they had shooting as us instead of shooting at us. And then they wrote wearing show shoes instead of snowshoes. I just thought that was funny, but I think it's kind of fun to find these typos in professionally published books, because it kind of makes me feel like, oh, it's okay if something slips through the cracks. I guess it's like you're not the only one who missed something.
Yeah.
And then as an example of content editing, this is kind of a spoiler, well, a small spoiler for the, I don't even know what it's called, the newest trilogy of Spider-Man movies. The beginning, Peter Parker goes to Doctor Strange and he says, I need help undoing something in the universe. And Doctor Strange is in a rush, which I think makes sense. And he kind of puts Peter off. He's like, you know, I'm not listening very well, and I'll start into the spell, and the spell goes wrong. And I feel like that whole thing worked really well, except one thing. And that's, I didn't think Doctor Strange had a legitimate reason to be in a rush. Like, and maybe he didn't, it was just off screen, but I feel like you need to bring that on screen and you need to give us a legitimate reason for him to not be listening to Peter Parker, because it sets up the whole movie and it just seemed like, well, that seemed kind of contrived, and it's very easy to make it not contrived by just giving him a reason for that rush. So I just bring that up as an example. This is kind of more content editing. Is this story making sense as a whole? So I recently hired a guy to do my audiobook for Starchild. And Starchild was published years ago, and it's been selling for years. Like, literally, the ebook has been up for years. And yet, I still edit it. I'll see something, and I'm like, oh, I'm publishing this new change.
Jay, stop.
I gotta change it. Yeah, I know. So when I hired this guy, I said, hey, you need to give me 2 weeks because I'm going to make my final edit of this book. And because it's really hard for me to let go of the editing process, but I am now because I'm not going to edit it once it's an audiobook. So in our last episode, which was 2 months ago, by the way, because I've been working on this edit and the podcast, and the audiobook. But in our last episode, I mentioned that Benton's, like, when you have this, the plot staff, there was a big gap for Benton, right, in the beginning. And I told you guys that on the podcast. And then as I'm doing this final edit before the audiobook, I'm like, I got to put that chapter in. So I added a chapter. and I think it helps. I think it helps fix that problem. So I added a 2,000-word chapter. But then just mostly on the paragraph and sentence level, I was cutting words. And I was actually shocked to find out that I had cut 7,000 words from the draft. And then I added those 2,000 for that new chapter. So 5,000 words cut. That was about a 4% reduction of the fat in that book. Just like fluff. I didn't really take anything out per se. I just made the prose a little tighter. And that's 4% worth, which that was shocking to me. But I think that's kind of an interesting number just to see.
Wow.
Okay, so we've had 8 episodes before this one where we talked about plot, hero, and world, like over and over, like deep details. And your objective as an editor is to make sure that you did all of those things that we talked about. And I'm not going to review everything here, but I'll just bring up some quick examples. So like for your world, do you get down the abstraction ladder? Are you making it very concrete? For your characters, do your characters that matter, your big characters, do they have a past? And do they have a personality that's distinct? And are they proactive? And then look at your plot clock. Like, is your pledge, your inciting incident, is that happening 25% in at 3 o'clock? And do you have good pinch points where people can really tell that the bad guy is there and is a legitimate threat? And honestly, you want to go through all this stuff that we've talked about. And when you're reading your draft, you need to make sure this stuff is in there. And if it's not, then you kind of tighten it up. I found this cool article about the Northern Lights. And the Northern Lights is a visual phenomenon. But there have been many reports that people think that they can hear something. And I guess it's a little controversial because scientifically, there's no reason that it should make any sound. And so,
well,
they suggest
there is a radio frequency that it emits that I know scientists have converted into sound because it's radio.
Right? Oh, that's kind of interesting. Well,
so,
yeah.
It's not quite the same thing because, you know, there are radio waves all around us and you don't hear any of that.
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, so people commonly report that they can hear it. And it's just sort of strange that that seems like it's impossible. And yet this happens repeatedly. And then incidentally, going along with that, there is potentially a metallic smell that the Northern Lights create as well. So I'm just pointing this out as an example of maybe you have something in your story that you describe visually, but maybe you didn't make it so that it could it was hearable or smellable. And so that's another thing to think about as you're reading your draft. Like, am I making this as vivid as I could, or can I tap into some of those other senses and kind of, you know, amp up the level so that people are more engrossed because they're feeling it more fully.
Right. Yeah, I think we talked about that in the Expand the Scene.
Yeah. In fact, yeah, I noticed several things I'm saying. It's like, we've already talked about this in one of Joe's episodes. Okay, and then Anton Chekhov has this great quote. He's a Russian playwright. He says, "Don't tell me the moon is shining. Show me the glint of light on broken glass."
That's good. That's a good one.
Yeah. And again, like, this is kind of on the copy editing side. This is about refining a sentence. And again, I think this is good, but just make sure you do it at the appropriate time. Okay, and then I'm just like obsessive about like details and data. And so I pulled some examples of edits. We're going to just look quickly at three books that there are public edits for. So The Da Vinci Code came out, it was famous, and then a couple years later, they made a Da Vinci Code adapted for young adults. And I was so curious, like, what kind of changes that meant? Because they don't tell you, they just say, well, it's adapted. And it's like, well, there's more to it than that. Like, what is it? And so I took kind of a forensic deep dive into the differences between these two books. And this is what I found. So in the original Da Vinci Code, there are 105 chapters. In the young adult version, there are 83. Okay. The word count of the first one was 143,000, and the new one is 88,000. So that's 40% of the novel that they chopped. Okay. Right. And that's huge. That's big. But I think an important thing to notice is that they have a specific audience in mind and a reaction that they want their reader to have. And they're saying, okay, how do we make this book fit what our audience needs? And I just think that's a good reminder. So incidentally, the word sex appeared in the original draft 47 times, and it's only in the young adult draft 4 times. And I think that's kind of a indication of how they changed the content. And then I actually just like compared line by line what was changed. And there are things like, there's one place where it says she, and instead they just changed she with Sophie. So maybe it was like a little unclear about who the she was. Right. Another one, it says the stars were now appearing, but to the east, a single point of light glowed. And for some reason, the editor changed that to the west. And I just cannot fathom why it should be west instead of east. That seems like a strange change. But then the next line is like that single point of light glowed brighter. And then it says Venus, the ancient goddess shining down with her steady and patient light. And
I
then,
wonder if there had just been early comments, either social media or whatnot, pointing out that the research was wrong on this.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I'm not positive on this, but I'm pretty positive that Venus can appear in both sides. But yeah, maybe like they looked up the specific date that this is supposed to take place and the specific season. Yeah. And then with that in mind, it was on the wrong horizon. But anyway, that's crazy to me. So the original draft, though, so this is the very ending of the book that we're looking at here. The original draft goes on from that point and talks about Sophie and Langdon, like kind of they have this brief conversation and then they kiss. And I'm pretty sure, I don't remember for sure, I think that's the first kiss of the book. Right at the end, they kiss. And then Langdon says it's a date, like that they have a date plan. And that's how the book ends, on the characters. And I just think it's really interesting that whoever edited this cut all that and ended it with the ancient goddess shining down with her steady and patient light, which, to be honest, I love that as a final line because I feel like that line is so poetic. Mm. But I kind of hate to cut the character stuff. So I think if it were me, I would just move that to after. So it's like the goddess is looking down on their plans, on their kiss and any Anyway.
See, I guess because when I read it, I had like, I walked away with like no investment in their relationship. And I've read, you know, more of the Langdon books, and that relationship has zero consequence for later books.
Yep.
And so I, you know, I think with the bigger perspective on Dan Brown's work, there's good reason to cut it because it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I just have a strong bias for character. And so I'm like, well, this is like the one good character moment maybe in the whole book. I wish we had more of it. But yeah, it hasn't been built throughout the book. And so it does seem kind of superfluous almost, because like this wasn't a romance in any way. There's like no hints at this.
Yeah.
At least I don't think so. But
like in this, even in the movie where they love to build their romances, there are very few hints because this the action is just pulling so fast, you know, that they don't really spend any, you know, like I said, the actors try to like slide it in with a look here and there, and that's about it, you know.
Yeah, dang. Yeah. Okay, so the second book I looked at is nonfiction, but it was Michael Pollan's The Omnivore's Dilemma, and this book is about like it takes a hamburger from McDonald's and goes back in time to where like all the pieces of that food came from. And this is crazy. The Young Readers Edition, they slashed 58% of it. And it doesn't look like an edit. It looks like a massacre.
Yeah.
Like everything is edited. It's just nuts. Then the third one I looked at is, it's a self-help book called The Anatomy of Peace, but it's technically fiction because it teaches its principles through story, which is fiction. Yeah. And so I compared the first to the fourth edition, which got 4% longer. It's like 3,000 words longer. And I just, again, you've talked about this, Joe, but they just tightened up the dialogue tags. Well, that was one thing I noticed. Sorry, the 3,000 words, they actually added a plot line and cut another one. And the difference was about 3,000 words more. But so I just want to go through a couple of these examples. So in this first, it has Lou speaking, and the dialogue tag says, Lou said, forcing a smile. And they just changed that. We had said and forcing. It's like, we don't need two verbs in there. We know he's talking. So it just said, Lou forced a smile. And we've kind of talked about this, but again, this is now copy editing. This is a very small... the small stuff, but so some of these paragraphs, they'll have two dialogue tags like Alpha Law answered and Alpha Law added. And it's like, no, just cut that. We only need one tag per paragraph so we know who the speaker is. And anyway, I just like to see how they kind of clean that up in the fourth edition. Okay, so one of my favorite images that I have ever found on the entire internet is a user experience example. And what it is, they have a remote control, a TV remote, and then a satellite cable TV remote. And whoever owns these wrapped a piece of paper around them to cover up all the buttons. And then
they weren't using.
They cut out a little notch for, here's the TV power button. You're going to need that. And then here's a little notch for the TV volume, and that's it. And like most TV remotes have like channels and numbers and all this stuff, and they're just covered up. And they did the same thing with the satellite remote. Like, here's the channel up and down, and here's the power button. And I just love how much they simplified that. And I think there's a lesson here in that we're communicating not with other writers. Like, our book isn't for other writers. Our book is for readers. And we need to think about, well, what is it that they're wanting out of this? And can I simplify it down to that and not do the stuff that's self-indulgent and like leading?
Yes. So like, I think, right, the remotes here are an excellent example, because a lot of times there's a blanket like idea that we just want more choices so we can pick what we really want. And in very much designing these remotes, the engineers were just like, we just want to make sure you can do anything you want to do with the remote. And then on the user side, people are looking at it and be like, what does all this do? I just want to turn my TV on. That's it. You know, like what is all of this junk? You know, and so this user instead of just ignoring everything, just covered it up so like he didn't accidentally push the wrong button. Like,
well, and like another point of this is 99% of people just need these buttons. And then there's that 1% that maybe need the rest of the buttons. And
yeah,
to me, it seems wrong to cater to that 1% and not the 99%.
Yeah. Well, and you will see this with, like, I think, like, the Amazon remotes. They're, like you look at them and be, like, there's only, like, 4 buttons on this whole thing. What the heck? Like, what do you even do with this? But seeing this remote, suddenly that remote makes sense to me. Be, like, oh, yeah, they're doing that thing.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I'm sure this image is going to make this episode dated in, like, a decade. They're going to be, like, what the heck is that remote?
Well, here's the thing. Like, there are people out there who are probably like me, and I hate the talking apps on phones and TVs and everything. Not because I don't like the idea that I could talk to it and it'll do what I want, but the idea that it talks back to me and it just feels like noise. And especially you get like 2 or 3 people in a room with apps and phones, and like suddenly it's just noise, just a lot of noise that doesn't need to be there. Whereas a remote doesn't introduce, you know, you don't speak to it. It doesn't speak back at you. And everything is just nice and quiet.
Dude, you gotta watch out.
There's a group of people like me who are like, just noise. We don't want all that noise out there.
Yeah.
We may be a minority, but
the robots are coming. You better watch out. I wanted to show a contrasting example. So I've actually never played World of Warcraft, but I have a friend who's famous in the world. Alien Shark was telling me about the history of World of Warcraft. So in 2004, they launched World of Warcraft, and the quests would say, like, you know, go south from here until you find the bones of this whatever beast, and then turn east and you'll find, you'll like look for such and such a tower, and that's where your quest is. And so to find that quest, you literally had to look around the world and find these landmarks and kind of explore and discover. That's interesting. And he said nowadays, the new version of World of Warcraft, there's like a HUD and like a mini map tracker, so you don't even have to know which direction you're going. There's like a little compass thing that's like saying it's right over there behind this hill, like it's pointing you exactly to it. And he said in the old days, there, like, you come up against like 2 enemies at once or 3, and there was a legitimate chance that you were going to get killed. Like, it was a big deal, and you probably just had to run for it. And he said now it's like it's easy, like you're never going to accidentally get killed. And you don't have to run for it. So in 2019, they relaunched Classic World of Warcraft, and it took away a lot of the easiness, right? Like they had made the game easy, and World of Warcraft Classic kind of brought back that difficulty and that challenge. And Alien Shark told me, he's just like, I love it. I like the original because it's a challenge. And he specifically said, my favorite gaming memories are when you enter a new world with so much mystery and you're just trying to figure it out. And so this is in contrast to the remote controls, where he likes it because there's mystery and intrigue. And I basically wanted to juxtapose these two ideas. Like, on the one side, you can be clear and accessible. And if you do that too much, it's going to be boring. And you can have it be interesting and mysterious and thought-provoking, but if you do that too much, it's going to be impenetrable and no one's going to like it. So you have to carefully weigh these two, and I can't tell you the answer, but the answer is going to be a little of one and a little of the other, and it's going to be a specific thing that matches your personality as an author, and it's going to be something that matches your audience. And so you got to consider those and find a good balance.
Yeah, like it's... You know, sometimes I'll read 2 books, and one is by a huge author, and the other is just some little indie. And the difference between the two is so little that it's almost not noticeable. But a lot of times that author who's doing a lot better just something about it just seems to stroke those emotions just a little better, a little more, you know, and it, like you said, it is a knife's edge, right?
Yeah.
Not enough, and you're a little bit boring, but too much, and it's impenetrable. And I mean, I think I've mentioned this before on podcast. Like, initially, I found the Game of Thrones to be impenetrable. Like, when I tried to read the first novel, there were so many characters that I felt like I didn't know what was going on because I didn't know who was doing what to who, when and where and why, or because I couldn't keep track of it. And I couldn't read those books until I had seen the first season because finally I could keep track of the characters. And then it was an awesome experience. But for me, I couldn't read the books flat out because I just couldn't keep track of everybody.
Man, I know exactly what you mean. I recently reread the first Game of Thrones book, and I was just shocked at how much detail is in there that makes sense once you know the world, but I just had no clue. I just did not get it the first time I read the book because it was just too much. I didn't have reference points for like any of it.
Yeah, yeah. So when I first picked up the book, I probably read a third of it, and I was like, I don't know. And I walked away, you know, and then, you know, I had some friends who really pushed me to check out the show, and I finally did. And it was awesome. And I was then able to go back and just read through all the books and just love them, you know, and I, to the point, like once the series had gone away from the books, it became really clear. And so I stopped. So I've never even finished the series on HBO.
Oh, that's so funny. I haven't either.
because the season that was after Martin's books, I was like, it's not as good. And I just stopped watching after that. Like I was done, you know, like the magic was gone. And so I was like, I'm just going to wait for the books.
Yeah. Man, I have my fingers crossed that the next one is this year. Okay. So let's see. I just thought this is kind of a fun idea, but I think that most stories that are not successful, so like when I get out of the movie theater and I'm like, well, that was a dumb movie, or like I read a book and I'm just like, nah, it didn't quite make it. I almost always feel like what I read or watched was a great first draft. But that it wasn't good enough. They published before they had finished smoothing it out. Mm-hmm. And I honestly would like to have a podcast that called Next Draft, and you just like critique stories by coming up with how to fix it and how to make it a little better in the next draft. I think that'd be a ton of fun.
It would be fun. We both would need to be full-time successful writers to commit to projects.
Yeah, I know. That'd take a lot of work for sure. But I just kind of wanted to close with this idea. Our next episode is going to be about editing together, like editing with your group, your writing group, or your beta readers, or your friends, or whoever. And I think that having someone else read your unpublished drafts is like almost a miracle. Like it is such a precious gift. It's something you can't do, and it's a really rare thing too. You've only got so many friends, right? And once you run out of those, you're basically out of beta readers. And it just seems like, I think it would be a huge tragedy to edit your book and you say, okay, well, I just finished a draft. I'm going to have my friend read it. Even though you know, well, this one chapter is not very good, or this character is not very strong. Because if your friend reads your book and then says, hey, that chapter is not very good, and you say, I already knew that, then you just literally wasted that precious gift of them like reading your book. And so in my mind, and I know this is hard to do, I try to edit it to where I've fixed literally everything that I know is wrong with the story. And so in my mind, it's a perfect draft. And then I hand it over to friends and they critique it and they tell me what's wrong with it. And it's like, dang, I thought that was perfect. And now you're pointing out these flaws. But I think that's okay. And I think that's good. I think when you're doing the edit it alone, you should push it as far as you can and just get that draft as solid as you can so that they're not pointing out things that you already know are wrong, and instead they're pointing out things that you can't see.
So one thing I do want to bring up here, and so before the official start of this episode, Jay and I were having a conversation about a novel I'm working on, and I hope that the audio works and that he can release that audio, because if you listen to our conversation, I start off by saying the book is about one thing, and by the end of the conversation, I have shifted that idea just a little bit. Now, I don't know if we were in the conversation or not where I mentioned I've got 15,000 words of the first draft, and then the outline is about another 5,000 words at this moment. But just in trying to explain to Jay what it is, I reached a point of greater clarity on what it is. Than all of my thinking through it. And there's a lot of books who do recommend talk through your drafts and your plots with people. Not only do you get feedback on it, but like I said, in that very conversation, I had greater clarity on what I needed to write. I sharpened down the theme in just trying to explain to Jay what this book was and what it was about. And if we go back to the drafts we're talking about, that's the big draft, because now when I go down to sit to write that book today, I'm changing that outline right now because I had greater clarity in trying to explain it to Jay.
Dang, that's cool.
So I hope that that audio works, because we were a little worried we may have lost it. And I hope that he can include it so that if you're curious, you can stick around and hear me explain it and hear me shift, because I do shift a little bit by the end.
Dude, that's cool. So that'll be on our Patreon, assuming I caught the audio. But so that'll be for our Patreon backers. I just want to say one thing related to that, that about 90% of the people who I tell that I'm an author, they respond by saying, I hate writing. And then the other 10% say, I'm actually working on a book. And so I meet a lot of people who say, can you look at my draft? And it's kind of too many for me to keep up with, to be honest. So, but what I've told people,
like, I meet nobody ever.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on the circle. So like I did an MBA program a couple years ago, so I was meeting tons of new people. Now I don't meet that many new people, but what I started to do was just say, I will sit down and talk through your book for an hour. Like, let's go to lunch and let's talk your book and you explain it to me. And that to me is almost more effective on both ends, because it doesn't take as much of my time, but it forces them to think through it out loud. And often we can just solve problems just by talking about it rather than having me read the entire draft and kind of figure it out that way. So anyway, yeah, I think that's a good idea. Okay, so that wraps up today's episode. If you have questions, we would love to hear from you. Our email is in the show notes. If you'd like to see the visuals, there's a link to the YouTube in the show notes. There's links to our books on there as well. So check out the show notes. Thank you so much for listening again today, and it's time to start writing.